Here's Anne Graham Lotz.
You've been commissioned. Maybe you just haven't heard it. Open your ears and listen to what God's saying to you.
Thank you for joining us on this week's edition of Living in the Light with Anne Graham Lotz. Anne gives us a powerful reminder from the book of Nehemiah that God is calling each one of us to do something to bring revival to our community. And like Nehemiah, it may be something you do in the course of a normal day, and God will bless it mightily. Here's Anne with today's message.
What are your daily responsibilities? What do you do every day, most of the days of the week? Get up in the morning, fix breakfast, do something for your children to get them off to school, or maybe they're already gone, and then you get about your laundry, your housework, or maybe you're getting them out the door so you can get out the door to your job. And what's just your normal routine? We're not looking for handwriting on the wall or lightning flashing or a voice from heaven. We're just looking what we do in a normal day, just as we go about our routine. And Nehemiah was simply going about his routine when he has a conversation with the king. Verse 2, the king asked me, "Why does your face look so sad when you're not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of heart." And I was very much afraid, because Nehemiah knew it could cost him his life, his job, and his life was on the line. But he said to the king, "May the king live forever. Why shouldn't my face look sad when the city where my fathers are buried lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire?" And Nehemiah just comes right out and tells the king what is burdening his heart. And then here comes the commissioner, here comes the opportunity. The king said to me, "What is it that you want?" Can you believe it? I mean, what he's been praying and fasting for 4 months, and it just plops right down. "Nehemiah, what can I do for you?" And then he had the open door. And you see Nehemiah, the way he took it, he said, "Then I prayed to the God of heaven." He just quickly prayed. Now, he's been praying and fasting for 4 months, but you see his dependency upon the Lord. "Lord, don't let me blow this. Lord, help me to express it to the king quickly and clearly. Let him see the burden on my heart. Lord, move in his heart that he would grant my request. Lord, help. If it pleases the king and if your servant has found favor in his sight, give him a long vacation with pay." "I want to go back and work for revival, and I want you to support me in it. I need your help, O king, to go and work for revival in my city." Did you see how the door opened? Just as he was going about his normal routine, he had prayed and prayed, and then the king said, "Nehemiah, what can I do for you? You know, you're so afraid maybe to approach your husband or your pastor or your employer, and you pray and pray, and the Lord gives you that opportunity. It's amazing how easy it is when it comes. When the Lord finally opened the door for me to get involved in my city, it just seemed to be so easy. It took lots of time and lots of effort, but one door opened after another one, and I just had to keep up. And the Lord opened this door for Nehemiah. He didn't have to force it or push it. It was just flung open for him. "Nehemiah, what can I do for you?" But it came unexpectedly, just right there in the middle of his routine. Sort of like when Peter was in prison. Do you remember when the angel released him? All the people were praying, and Peter goes through the streets and he knocks on the door where all the people are praying, and he says, "Let me in, this is Peter." And the little servant girl hears his voice and recognizes it, but she wasn't expecting him. Even though they were praying he would be released, she wasn't expecting him. So she runs back, leaves the door locked, goes back and tells the group that's praying, "Peter's at the door, and they've been praying for his release," and they say, "It can't be Peter, he's in prison." And then he keeps banging on the door, and they let him in, and they find that it's Peter. Even though they'd been praying for it, they weren't expecting him to show up. And Nehemiah has been praying for this, but it came unexpectedly. Oh, and the Lord hears your prayer. And he's not in any big hurry to answer, because he's got to time the whole thing. But when it comes, you just watch out, because it will come just in a normal, everyday, typical routine. And there the door will be open, and you'll have opportunity to do something about which you've become so burdened. It came unhurriedly. It came unexpectedly. When it came unreservedly, without reservation. I just love the way the king did this, because the king said, "Nehemiah, what do you want?" And the king said, "Nehemiah, you can go as long as you want," when he told him it would take time. In verse 6, then the king with the queen sitting beside him said, "How long will your journey take, and when will you get back?" He wasn't setting a limit on Nehemiah. He was just saying, "Tell me how long you're going to be gone. You can have as much time as you want." So he gave Nehemiah all the time he wanted. And then he said, Nehemiah, you can go when you want. In verse 6, then Nehemiah set the time. Nehemiah determined when he would go and when he would come back. So he could go when he wanted. He could have what he wanted. In verse 7, he asked for letters of introduction to the political leaders and then letters of recommendation to the business leaders. And the king gave him the letters. And then the king gave him more than he'd asked for down in verse 9 when he gave him a military escort. So I just want you to get the picture of the king who gave Nehemiah everything he asked for and more than he had asked for. And Nehemiah recognized in back of the king was the king. In verse 8 he says, because the gracious hand of my God was upon me, the king granted my request. And all through this little book you have that little phrase, the gracious hand of my God upon me, or God moved in the king's heart, or God did this. And he's aware that in back of the king was God commissioning him to work to rebuild the walls. And I'm here to give you public testimony that when God opens a door for you to get involved and begin to work for revival, he will give you what you ask for, and he will give you more abundantly than you could even think to ask for. Revelation chapter 3, Jesus begins that chapter, the letter to the church at Ephesus, and he says, look at me, I hold the keys. And he's speaking not just the keys to the doors that go into heaven, meaning that he lets people in and out, but he's speaking to the keys to the doors of opportunity on earth. Jesus holds the keys. It's not your pastor, and it's not your employer, and it's not your husband, and it's not whoever you think is in authority over you. Jesus holds the keys. And you pray and ask him to give you an opportunity to work for revival, give you an opportunity to do something that'll make a difference in this city, and then you just wait. Offer yourself. Begin to prepare yourself. Make yourself available. And then one day in your routine, the door is going to be open and you walk through it, and you know as you walk through it, he will give you everything you need. The equipment, the enabling, the empowering, even more than you could think to ask for. So that the job is done to the glory of God and lives are impacted for all eternity. That's what he did for Nehemiah. Nehemiah was working for revival because he was concerned. The brokenness had become a burden. And then also because he was commissioned by the king. And you say, Anne, I've never been commissioned by the king. Oh, yes, you have. Go into all the world and preach the gospel. You are the salt of the earth. You're the light of the world. You are my witnesses in Jerusalem, in Judea, in Samaria, and the uttermost parts of the world. You've been commissioned. Maybe you just haven't heard it. Open your ears and listen to what God's saying to you. Saying to you, you've been commissioned by the King to do something to bring about revival in your city, to do something about the brokenness amongst God's people. Nehemiah worked for revival because he was concerned, he was commissioned, and he knew it. And he was committed. He was committed to prepare to work. You know, he had to walk 600 miles. Think about it. Think of all the packing for a trip like that. And just all the little shopping for odds and ends and all the busy work to pack up his camels or whatever he had and to walk for 600 miles through the desert before he could even get to the place he could begin to work for revival. That's a lot of effort and a lot of energy. He was committed. Committed to prepare to work. And finally, he got to Jerusalem. I can only imagine what it meant. In verse 11, I went to Jerusalem, and after staying there 3 days, I set out during the night with a few men. Can you imagine Nehemiah, who's been born and raised in Persia as a Jew in exile, coming into Jerusalem for the first time and seeing the city of God, and it's all in disrepair. The emotion that must have gone through his heart and his mind. And then he waits and goes out to assess the condition of the brokenness, and he does it at night. He doesn't want anybody to see what he's doing, and I think he's very practical. He's wanting to see exactly how big the job is. And he's been back in Persia. He doesn't really know what the condition of the walls is, and so he's wanting to assess it without anybody else looking over his shoulder. It's what Jesus describes in Luke as counting the cost before you plunge into a job and get involved. Just looking to see exactly what is needed. Would you make the time to assess the condition of the walls within your church? within the city? What is needed? Just exactly what is the brokenness and how bad is it? What can you do? What needs to be done? Is it a prayer group that needs to be begun on your street, or a Bible study open for your neighbors? Or is it something that needs to be done in your church? Maybe they need to have something like this. Or maybe there needs to be the Bible taught in Sunday school to the children. Or just go and assess the condition of the walls. And don't tell anybody. I think sometimes we tell people and then our vision is bigger than what we can tackle. And then we feel like failures before we've even started. Just quietly, between yourself and the Lord, go look and see what needs to be done. What are the condition of the walls around you? Would you quietly just assess the condition? Nehemiah went around at night when nobody could see him, just by himself, looking at the walls and seeing what needed to be done. Not only did he assess the condition of the walls after he had decided how badly off they were and what needed to be done, then he had to enlist the cooperation of other people. He couldn't do all this by himself. Now he needed some help. So in verse 17, he gathers all of these people together and he says to them, "You see the trouble we're in. Jerusalem lies in ruins and its gates have been burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem and we'll no longer be in disgrace." Do you see how clear and concise his presentation was? He didn't use charts and graphs and videos and all of that. He just said, "Listen, the walls are broken down. We need to build it back because the city's in disgrace. Let's get going." Whose help do you need? Can you enlist the cooperation of a friend or a neighbor? Somebody that'll come alongside you and share your burden and work with you to rebuild the walls within your church or your community. And you don't have to go into a long explanation. Just say, "Listen, have you seen the marriages of the Christians in our church? They need help. Would you just help me? And we're going to start a seminar, start a Sunday school class, and let's just study from the scripture what God says about marriage and forgiveness and loving each other." And or maybe there are all these children running wild in your neighborhood, and you call in your Christian neighbor and say, "Look at all these kids just running all over, and they're getting all in all this trouble, and would you help me? Let's just open up our home for a backyard Bible club, or just start something for the kids in the afternoon when they come home from school, and look, this is the need, and will you help me meet it?" And you see, it's almost simple, isn't it? Just get the people together and tell them what the problem is. And then look at his confidence in verse 18. He says, "I also told them about the gracious hand of my God upon me and what the king had said to me." His presentation was clear. His presentation was confident. He was saying, "Listen, God is in this. And I believe God has led me in this. And I expect he gave a word of testimony about how he had been interested and then informed about the brokenness. The brokenness became a burden. Then how he had that opportunity to tell the king about it, how the king had come through with everything he had. And now Nehemiah is saying, "I can stand before you with confidence and say, God has led me thus far, and I don't think he would have brought me to this point if he wasn't in this and he wasn't going to help us." Would you just think, assess the condition of the brokenness, and then enlist the cooperation of others by pointing out to them the need, sharing with them your confidence that God would have you meet the need. God would have you do something about it. Nehemiah not only assessed the condition, enlisted the cooperation, but then he had to overcome and resist the criticism that he got before he even began. I wonder if that's where you stop. As soon as you get criticism, as soon as somebody says, "Well, I don't think you ought to be doing that. You know, we've never had that for two-year-olds in church before, and I just don't think it can be done." And open your home for a backyard Bible club. You know all the things that these kids are going to be doing in your yard, and they're going to be around you all the time, and they're just going to become a nuisance. And besides, you've got to be available to your husband, and your family is your priority. And so they said in verse 10, "When Sanballat and Tobiah heard about this, they were very much disturbed that someone had come to promote the welfare of the Israelites." And there are all these little murmurings and all of these little disputings and all of this little criticism and the talk behind the back, and you know how it goes. And not only was it talking behind his back and criticizing him, but then they just came right up to his face. In verse 19, Sanballat and Tobiah came and they mocked and ridiculed Nehemiah and those he had enlisted for help. And they said, "What is this you're doing? Are you rebelling against the king? Does your husband know what you're trying to do? And has your pastor said you can do that? And, you know, what do you think you're doing anyway? What can one person do about the brokenness in our city? I mean, you've got to be kidding. What can you do? And you've got to watch it or you're going to offend somebody." And we live in a pluralistic society. Everybody has their own faith and everybody has their own God. And you know, you're going to offend somebody if you go out telling people about Jesus and reading the Bible. And look how Nehemiah answered them. I answered them by saying, the God of heaven will give us success. We, his servants, will start rebuilding, but as for you, get lost. Not going to listen to you, not going to talk to you, not going to discuss this with you. We're just going to get busy and do the work. I wonder how many works get stopped right there. The first time somebody stands up and says, you can't do that, and who do you think you are, and they start to criticize, we get all upset and we feel sorry for ourselves and we begin to re-examine everything, and the work stops. If you know God has opened the door, and Nehemiah knew that. He'd been praying and fasting 4 months, remember? And then God had led him thus far and given him everything he'd asked for, and the doors are opening, and he knows God's hand is on him. Why does he need to discuss it with these people? Why does he need to even tolerate their criticism? So he doesn't. And just tells them to get lost. He just shrugs it off, just ignores it, and gets on with the work. How committed are you to prepare to work for revival? All of this up to this point has just been preparation. He hasn't even started yet. Nehemiah was committed to prepare, and he was so committed that when he had prepared, he proceeded with the work. Are you committed enough to prepare to work for revival that when you are prepared, you'll proceed, you'll get on with it, you'll start to work? Nehemiah chapter 3 is a list of the names of people who got on with it. They all worked to build the walls. Now, may I ask you, what are you waiting for? If you're concerned about the brokenness and it's become a burden, if you're concerned about the brokenness within your own church and amongst the lives of people who call themselves Christians, if you read the newspaper and you watch TV and you hear the things that are happening in the Christian community and your heart is broken and you're deeply burdened, and if you're concerned and God's given you the opportunity to do something about it, why haven't you? What are you waiting for? Waiting for your kids to grow up and go off to school. And then they grow up and go off to school, and then you're waiting for just to have enough money in the bank account so you can take care of them when they go to college, and then you're waiting for them to get married, and then you're waiting for your husband to retire, and you know, we just wait and wait and put it off and put it off, and there's never a convenient time, never a comfortable time to get busy and work for the Lord. And I'll tell you something, Satan will make sure that there's never a good time to proceed with the work. You just have to do it. All of these people in chapter 3 just did it. They proceeded with the work, and they had different abilities. I love to see all the different characters, and I'm just going to skim through it. But verse 8, there were goldsmiths and perfume makers working side by side on the wall. I would call them the professionals in the city. And then down in verse 12, you have the rulers of the city. That would be like the political leaders or the city council. And then you have their daughters. The women worked on the wall also. And then in verse 22, you have the priests or the religious leaders. In verse 26, the temple servants, just the average pew sitter. And then in verse 32, you have the merchants or the businessmen. You've just got some of everybody. All have different abilities. I can't sing like Kendra. I wish I could. I can't preach like my daddy. I wish that I could. I can't pray like other people I know. I wish that I could. There's some things I can't do, but God has given me certain gifts that I can use for Him. Our abilities are not the same. Some of us are perfume makers, some goldsmiths, some merchants, some priests, some temple servants. You see, all different abilities. But when we give it to the Lord, He can use every single one of us. That's why He's given you the different ability He's given you. Nobody can do it just like you. But you can do it. You can do something. They all had different abilities, and then they were all given different responsibilities on the wall. This wall was 2 miles long. In the end, it was 10 to 15 feet thick, had 8 or more gates. And one person couldn't have built that wall. The way it was built was everybody had his own section. So I would stand here and maybe have 3 feet of the wall to build. And I would work shoulder to shoulder with someone else, and they built their 3-foot section, and then they were working shoulder to shoulder with somebody else, and they built their 3-foot section, as everybody did his part and everybody accepted his responsibility, the whole wall was built. You don't have to do it like somebody else. You don't even have to do what somebody else is doing. You just ask God to show you what your responsibility is, and you do it. It's a wonderful thing about being a part of the body of Christ. Some of us can teach, and some of us can pray, and some of us can organize, and some of us can help in the kitchen, and so many different things that we can do. But when we all do it, the job gets done to the glory of God. And all these people, they had different abilities, they had different responsibilities. But when each one met their own responsibilities, the job got done. Third thing that was interesting for me to see was that they gave it different qualities of work. Verse 5 says, the nobles of Tekoa did not put their shoulders to the work. You know people like that? They come late to the meeting. They're looking for the coffee and donuts. They doze while they're sitting there. They never take notes. Then they leave a little bit early because they've got some child to go pick up, and they just never put their shoulder to the work. But then you have down in verse 20, Barak zealously repaired another section. He gave 100%. I wonder if someone was describing the way you work for the Lord, how would they describe it? You don't put your shoulder to it? I mean, your boss is invisible, so maybe you can get by with something. Or do you work with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, more conscious of your invisible boss than any visible boss on earth, wanting to work to please him? All of these people proceeded with the work. And I'm not going to go into the rest of these chapters, but I do want you to turn over to chapter 6, verse 15. Because Nehemiah was concerned and commissioned and committed, other people were concerned and commissioned and committed right alongside of him, and the wall was completed in 52 days. And when all of our enemies heard about this, our enemies lost their self-confidence because they realized this work had been done with the help of our God. They rebuilt the walls to the glory of God, and even the pagan unbelievers saw what they did and gave God the glory. Oh, that God would do that in this city. That as you begin to work for him, and as you begin to get involved, and maybe it just seems a small thing, just a little 3-foot section, but you get busy and you do your part, and the next person is busy and she does her part, and the next person, and the next person, and before you know it, God has impacted the entire city, and people stand back and they say, my word, that must be God. Women couldn't do that. People who are busy couldn't do that. It must be God is in this. And they give him the glory. Oh, my challenge to you. Would you not just want revival? Oh, I want you to want revival. And I pray to God you will want revival like the woman in John chapter 4 so much, as we're living in a time of national dilemma, that you would come to the well and drink of the water. Then you would go out into that world to witness. Tell people what Jesus has done for you. Make an eternal impact on one other person's life. And then as you're witnessing, would you also choose not only to want the revival in your life and want it in the lives of other believers and in your city, but would you do something to bring it about? Would you begin to work for revival? And maybe your work begins today with nothing more, nothing less than you getting on your knees and praying and fasting and asking God to give you the opportunity to do something. Ask him to give you that sense that he has commissioned you and given you an opportunity to do something about the brokenness in our society and in our churches. And in the lives of those around us. And then would you be absolutely committed? And that's just a choice you make. That's just a decision you make in your own heart and your own mind. Would you choose to be committed to prepare the work for revival? And then would you be committed to proceed in the work when God opens the door?
You've been listening to Living in the Light. And when you go to angramlotz.org, there are free resources to help you in your study of God's Word. Anne's desire is that you embrace a God-filled life, step by step, choice by choice, living in the light.